Well, Father, said I, one day when I was in beside the fire and he on the other side of it reading a letter which had come that day from America. What is your opinion of the great long journey that is now before me? What journey is that? Said he quickly, raising his head and looking at me over his glasses. It's not long now until you'll see the guard's uniform on me. He looked into the fire. Are you in earnest?
I am indeed.
When will you be going? Said he with a sigh.
Tomorrow.
Well, I give you my blessing, for so far as this place is concerned, it has gone to ruin. It is, long since. And even if it were not, what is there in it but fishing, hunting, and fowling, and according to the old saying, they are the three most unprofitable occupations. It is true, he said sadly. The next morning was fine and soft. It was a Tuesday, the 15th of March, 1927. I got myself ready early, for it was the day for the King of the Island to go out to bring in the post. I had everything in readiness, my mind at rest, my holiday clothes on, and my destination known only to my own people. After a while, I saw Sean Fodder approaching. "I see there's some intention in your head today, son of O'Sullivan," said he at last. "I am for taking the leap." "Where are you travelling?"
"Yeah. Where would it be, Sean, but to spend a week in the town of Dingle? Haven't I tired of this place?"
"Ah, my heart from the divil, you're right. You're the divil take it. There are young people here, and without like or mockery, there's the look of the cinders on them."
At that moment, I saw the King of the Island coming down the causeway. He soon came up with me to the top of the quay.
"Are you going out?"
"I am resolved on it."
Soon we were on our way out from the pool, my back to the island of my birth and my face to the mainland. I heard barking behind me. I knew well what it was. Looking back, I saw Rose out on the bank howling as she saw me departing from her. I crushed down the distress that was putting a cloud on my heart. We reached Dunquin at last. I said goodbye to the king, and I walked slowly and heavily up the path. I stopped. I stretched myself and looked back at the island. Little I thought once of forsaking it, but my sorrow that day was come at last. I continued towards the north. When I came to the top of the Karoo, I stopped again and sat down to take a rest. I lit my pipe, seeing I'd no other comfort. I looked again at the island. It was the last sight I would get of it. The first spot that struck my eyes was the summit of the Crow, the highest hill in it, and this verse came into my head. "Farewell, happy hilltop, crowned in purple heath. He who scaled the summit looks back in it with grief." I stepped out ever and ever until I came down into Ballyferriter. It was necessary for me to get a certificate from the priest there, and I made my way to his house. A girl came to the door. "Is the priest inside, if you please?" said I. She did not answer. "Have you Irish?" said I. Again no reply from her, so I spoke to her in English. "Oh, he is. Come in here a while." Well, thought I, isn't it a strange thing to meet already a girl without Irish? When the parish priest had given me the certificate, I gave him a farewell and blessing and went on my way. After that, I made neither stop nor stay till I reached the house of Martin Cain in the town of Dingle, myself and the Star together. I strolled into the kitchen, and my heart full of delight to have accomplished the journey of the day. Martin rose from the chair. "Where did you come from?" said he. "Or who are you at all?" I was surprised when I saw he did not know me from my days at the institution, though indeed it was long since I'd been in Dingle. "Faith," said I, "I am no Irishman anyway."
"You are not?"
said Martin in astonishment. "I am not indeed, though I have Irish blood in me." Both he and his wife are now looking at me intently. "But if you're not an Irishman, what are you?"
I am a basket man, my boy, said I. Martin laughed. By God, you may well say it, and it is well I recognize you now. When I had eaten my supper, I questioned him about the train, and especially the time it was to leave in the morning. Do you mind me asking you, where is your destination?
To take a week in the capital city.
Ah, faith, I knew you had the spirit in you.
But don't let the divil keep you from calling me in the morning, said I, going up the stairs.
Have no fear. I did not sleep much that night, ever pondering over the difficult journey which lay before me. I was in a nightmare. I awoke with great comfort and contentment of heart to find myself stretched on the warm bed. 3 nights I lived in that night. When I had eaten my breakfast, I said farewell to Martin and his wife and set out for the train. I was soon at the station. I went into the ticket office. There were many before me. I waited. By God, said I to myself, to judge by the progress I'm making, the train will go without me. I ran out onto the platform and met a man with a hordern peak cap on his head. If you please, said I, is it long till the train will be going? He took out his watch. In 10 minutes more, said he. I leapt back into the office. The others were now ready, and I got my ticket and came out again. I stopped, looking all round me. Oh, Lord, where did all the people come from? Nothing but chatter and confusion everywhere. I got up my bag and away with me. I'd only gone a few steps when an echo came back from the whole town of Dingle with the whistle the train threw out, and as for myself, I was lifted clean from the ground. I looked around to see if anyone had noticed the start it took out of me, but nobody had. Everyone was inside the train but myself. Off I ran, but I could not get an opening anywhere. I heard a voice at my back. I looked over my shoulder. Someone had opened a door for me. I sat down in the seat, and soon the train began to move. There was no one in the compartment but myself. I was gazing out through the window. Fine green fields and houses everywhere. The Blasket Island and the wild sea far out of sight. After a while, a jolt was taken out of me and the train stopped. I saw many people leaving the train. We are in Tralee, said I to myself, taking up my bag and stepping out. I ran straight into a hordern-capped lad pushing a truck with a box in it. I beg your pardon, but is this Tralee? He stopped and looked at me.
Man, you are only in Annaskull yet. About 12 o'clock you'll be there.
1,000 thanks to you, said I. And in I went again. The train stopped again. Again I looked out. And again many were leaving. As they leapt out, they would stop to look back at the train, and faith it seemed that every one of them was putting his eyes through me and saying to each other, "Why isn't that fella coming out?" I slunk back and caught up my bag. "It's likely," said I, "the train will go no farther, and that worthless lout I met on the station just now was mocking me." I got out and looked round. I saw another man like the one I met before. I went up to him.
When will we be in Tralee?
In another hour, said he, leaving me in haste. I got back into the carriage. Drawing out my pipe, I took a good smoke from it. It did me good, and why wouldn't it with the long journey I was making, which had been tormenting my mind for a week with the mere thought of it? Well, when the time came, I landed in Tralee. The train stopped. I got out again, and I spoke to one of the horn peak caps. "I suppose this will be Tralee," said I. "It is," said he. We fell into conversation, and I picked from him the time the train was to leave for Dublin. I had 4 hours to spend in the city, but if so, though I had been told that the train would not start till 4 o'clock, I had no intention of leaving the station, for I had no trust in the train but that it might go at any time. I put my bag against the wall and kept my eye on it always. As I looked round, I saw first one woman, then another, putting their bags in through a window,
They were given some kind of red ticket and then departed. "Faith," said I, "it looks as if that is a place to keep the parcels." I caught my bag and went up to the window. The man asked my name, put some figures in the bag, and handed out to me a little red ticket. I was well pleased with myself now, and why wouldn't I be? And every knowledge coming to me. I wandered out again on the platform, and whatever way I looked, what would I see but "Telegraph Office," written in big letters over a door. My heart grew as big as a cow to see it, and I went in to send a telegram to my friend George in Dublin. The task finished, my heart was now rising continually the way I was getting knowledge of everything. I was considering now, would I make an attempt into the city, for the hunger was oppressing me. I walked out of the station, but much I was not far when my courage was failing. Wherever I looked, there was a crossroad. "My soul from the devil," said I, "if I go any farther, I'll be like a blind man wandering through the city. I'll never find the right road back again." I turned on my heel and went back to the station. I sat down on a big, long bench. Two little lads were running past me, up and down, playing ball. After a while, a thought struck me. I called them up to me. They stopped playing, looked at each other, and giggled. Would you mind going up into the city for me?" "We would not," said they, looking down at their feet, bashfully. "Good boys." And putting my hand in my pocket, I gave them some money. "Here now, keep that for yourselves, and buy me a pound of bread and butter with this." They ran away without another word, and in 10 minutes they were back again with my food for the journey, done up nicely, and little packets for themselves. When I had eaten, I arose contentedly. There was only another hour to pass before I would be moving off towards the capital city. In my walk, I noticed a young man and girl coming onto the platform carrying a couple of bags. The woman was about 30 years, as far as I could tell, and the man about 25. I knew by the way they cast an eye here and there, they too were without knowledge of the way. "By my baptism," said I in my own mind, "I think you were a pair of blind travellers like myself." After a while, the young man came over and greeted me. He was one of the O'Connors, back from Annascaul. Like myself, he was going into the civic guard, but without a word of Irish. He made me known to the girl, a sister of his, who was going to Dublin with him. It was a great comfort to me to have made friends with the two of them. For now, I thought, I have found good guides for the journey.
"20 Years of Growing" by Maurice O'Sullivan was abridged by Anne Rhys-Jones and read by P.G. Stevens. The producer was Maurice Leach.